What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. I don't know why I always go up on my voice when I say Kinda Neat, but I do it. It's my thing. Deal with it. Follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man, Ben Shen, behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, base with two S's. Hit us on Facebook, facebook.com/kindaneat. We're finally about to break 500 followers on our Facebook fan page. We love you for doing that. Thank you so much. Follow us as a unit on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. I might have already said that. Kindaneat.net wrapped up in a pretty package. YouTube.com/That's Kinda Neat, where you're going to see our guest this week, El Prez, perform something from the Prezport record called Home Sweet Home. It's a record that he made with Jansport J. It's a dope collab. I've known both of those guys for quite some time now. You know, we're out here on the LA scene. We've been doing it, and he's a dude that I've been seeing around forever. I was talking to Andrew from Potholes in My Blog. Shout out to Andrew. I know he's a loyal listener, and that is the homie as well. We sit and vent to each other about the music industry stuff on Facebook sometimes. And I was talking to him on Facebook, and I was like, man, it's rough around the holidays. I feel like I don't know who I should interview. And he said, man, El Prez just put out a really dope record. And I said, man, El Prez has been the homie forever. I've been seeing him around for so long. That's tight. I'm stoked that he's doing shit. So like, yeah, I hit him up, came in, killed the performance, had a good conversation about growing up in Los Angeles, being an all city traveler. He went to like 100 different schools and shit. It's crazy. So first things first, let's talk about me. 'Cause that's what I do during this segment. Unless you guys send me questions that I can answer and give advice about, which is what I'd like you to do. So hit me up on Facebook, send me a private message that asks a question for advice or whatever. But in the meantime, I got a new car this week. That was like a big stressful part of my week. And man, I hate going to the car dealership. Like I lease cars because I'm somebody that, like, you know, if you're a small business owner, you can write it off as a tax write-off. And also, I just like to get into a new whip every couple of years, and it makes the payments a lot cheaper. So, you know, I don't care about not owning a car, because when you own a car, it's like you'll probably end up in a upside down loan or whatever. I don't know anything about money, to be honest. So I'm sure I will get messages or tweets from people going, no, man, you should be buying your cars, not leasing. But in the time of now, it helps me because the monthly payments are much lower to lease. So I go in because my lease was up, you know, and I have to like deal with a dealer. So first you're talking to this dealer guy and you're telling him the numbers that you want, and you're finagling him and working him down and down, and you know, telling him, oh yeah, you know, I've been a good customer, I've been a loyal repeat customer, you guys should hook me up, and you know, fighting for numbers, and then go out for the test drive, and I'm like trying to create a rapport with the dude. He was Korean. Shout outs to Ben, who's also Korean. So he's like, you know, I'm from K-Town. And I said, oh yeah, man, I got a lot of homies in K-Town. I said, oh, you know Dumbfounded? He didn't know Dumbfounded though. I was hoping that'd be my, I'm like, man, this motherfucker's going to give me a free car if I get him an autograph, dog. But, you know, I started talking to him about K-Town shit and like Korean barbecue, and he was like all impressed, and all of a sudden we were like friends and shit. And so then then I just had to buckle down real quick. My strategy was like butter him up, make him happy, make him smile, and then hit him with the numbers. And so that's what I did and got it down. And I'm like, damn, this is tight. I think I'm going to like get exactly the numbers that I want. And he's like, okay, let's get you into the finance guy. And then I get to the finance guy, and it's like starting the process all fucking over again. He starts you off with all these crazy fees and like numbers that where it's like, oh no, sorry, that was must have been a miscommunication between the dealer and I, like this number, and he didn't tell you about this number, and then this, that, and the other. And I'm like, god damn, man. Like, so you have to start arguing again and threatening that you're going to walk out and all this shit until you get the numbers back to where you want them to be. It's such a hassle. And it's like the strategies that they use of like the first 20 minutes that I was in there, I saw the salesman dude like three times. And each time he would come to ask me one question, and then I would answer that question. It was usually a one word question, a yes or no. And then he would go, oh, okay, cool, let me go back and look at something again then. So it's like they leave you there to just get you impatient so that you make bad decisions. But little do they know, your boy got books to read on the iPhone, got that Instagram to fucking lurk on, my Plants vs. Zombies to fucks with, you know? So I'm in there being patient. I'm like, you ain't fooling me. You're not going to fool me and make me impatient. I'll sit there, call my mom on the phone, chit-chat with her, catching up with old relatives and shit. I didn't give a fuck. I was patient, and it worked. But yeah, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you already heard me tweet this joke, but like when I'm telling you, when they say they're going to check your credit, it's like so much has changed in my life since the last time I got into a lease. Because like right after I got my newest car, or the last car that I was in, like I got laid off. I've been like pretty much unemployed, gainfully unemployed for the last 3 years, you know, being freelance, what have you, doing this stuff, doing the YouTube stuff, doing the photo stuff. And so it's like, I don't really have an employer per se, so I don't know how that affects your credit. It's like, I know that I've always had pretty good credit, but still waiting for those test results, even though it's just like waiting for an AIDS test results. It's like, hey man, I've been pretty safe, you know what I mean? But who knows? Maybe there was a slip up somewhere. Maybe I missed a bill somewhere. Maybe I didn't use a condom one time. Who the fuck knows? It's the same feeling where you're waiting to hear back from your credit score, and it's like, oh God, please, please be a good credit score. Just like with the AIDS test. I mean, now they do the AIDS test in like 3 minutes, but back in my day, you whippersnappers, we used to have to wait a week for our results. And that week, oh my God, it was the most nerve-wracking shit. It's crazy. Even though everything you learned in health class, they lied to you about, and it's much harder for a heteronormative male to get AIDS. But that's a whole nother story that I won't get into right now. Point being, my credit score is pretty good. It's an A rating. Ladies, if you're listening, your boy got good credit. If you got a good job, maybe we could go in on a house together. Who knows? I got a new car. And by the time you guys hear this, it'll have been Thanksgiving. So I'm probably sitting somewhere on a couch feeling happy and fat right now. That being said, El Prez is in the building today. You guys can find his new record with Jansport J. It's called Prezport at Prezport.com. Prezport. I haven't heard the whole thing yet, I'll be honest with you, but I'm going to go download it because, I'm down. Jansport makes banger beats. I've been knowing about these fools forever. Prez is somebody that I've just seen around at shows since I moved to L.A. Real personable dude, easy to talk to, and I think you guys will enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my man, El Prez. It's a brave new world, man. Yeah, for a couple of OGs like us.
Hey, man.
Shit.
You know, we like to talk a lot about shit, old days and stuff. Anyway, so fuck it.
Reminiscing is fun. Yeah. Speaking of reminiscing shit, I mean, I've been seeing you on the scene for like forever now. Like I moved down to LA in like probably 2007, and I would see you are out at shows and shit. Like, you've been doing this
likewise,
a minute, right?
Yeah. I've been doing it a while, man.
Yeah. When did you start rapping?
I mean, I started rapping probably when I was 18. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was 18, I really started taking it seriously, thinking I could do some senior year of high school, 17, 18, hopping the ciphers and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I got to college, the college I went to, one of my homies that did music on some R&B stuff, he was like, yeah, it's a lot of people I know that do music up there. You'd be cool
going
there, because I was going to go to a black college. But
where were you going
to
go?
I was going to go to Morris Brown.
Okay.
Out there in Atlanta, just to get away and stuff, or Clark.
Believe
Atlanta.
It or not, I got a scholarship there. No, I'm just kidding.
Shit, I don't believe anybody could get a scholarship there. But yeah, so I went to CSUN instead, though.
Up in the Valley.
Cal State Northridge, yeah. So I went out there, clicked up with some cats who I knew that had a studio, mm-hmm. and had, you know, they was the cats rapping in the lunchroom and all that stuff. And
who
I wanted
that?
To be down. So it's not a lot. Anybody from there still pop? No, none of them rap, but they all still work in various parts of it. So like,
there was this crew from Oxnard. Were you ever up in Oxnard back then?
Nah, I never made it that far, but
there was this crew, man. They were pretty good. This dude J Pro was in it in Oxnard. I don't know. There was actually a lot of stuff popping in like kind of the, Northridge is kind of the tip
what,
of the
what
valley.
What era
are
you talking about?
Like Central California, I guess. Central Coast. Oh, what era? Oh shit! Like 2001, 2002?
Yeah, that's around that time. I was there like 90, 99, 2000, so yeah.
Because I was up in Santa Barbara back then, and so like sometimes people from kind of the tip of the valley and like Oxnard Ventura would be coming to Santa Barbara and do shows and shit. Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Like out there, the name was, what was them niggas called? One to One, and there's a whole bunch of little names and stuff, but they never really did too much. But one of the homies, Cousteau, he does something big with Nice Kicks and Kicks on Fire. He does like a sneaker podcast thing on the weekly. So he's really like his stuff is popular as hell on YouTube and all that stuff. But and other cats, they do licensing stuff, so they still in there doing it. But them cats, when I was young, I was just like, oh man. And then they had the studio too, and you know how I was back then. This is before Pro Tools, so we was rocking off of ADAT. And a Tascam, you know, four track and
right,
shit.
Right.
So we were doing that, and it was just dope. It was a whole different era. Like, cats don't understand that era.
It was a privilege to get to record back then, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You had to be apprenticed into the game.
Absolutely.
I waited a year before they would even let me touch a mic to get on a song.
Right.
You know, and I'd be there. They would have these things that were dope. It was like a cypher. Every Sunday, we'll meet up over Cousteau House, over Jock Spot. And he had a little two-bedroom apartment. We'd be in the living room. It'd be like 12 of us. And everybody in the valley, that was dope. You know, cats from L.A., if you heard about this shit, they would be coming through. Because it'll be like, eventually, it'll be like little record cats come through. It was crazy on a low-key tip because a couple of the homies had publishing deals back then. So a lot of cats would come in and want to battle, and we'll play like Lyrical Knockout and stuff like that, where it was just you have four bars because there's so many cats. You only have four bars, spit all off the dome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll spit at somebody, and if they didn't come right back at you, they had to get up out the circle type shit.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of practice. You know, it really honed and honed your skills and stuff.
Yeah.
So I would be in that whole dungeon, you know, for like a year before I could even record on what they was recording.
Before they're like, okay, you're tight enough now.
Yeah, you're tight enough. Okay, you could do eight bars on you know, where are you and your homies at? Let's go do something.
Yeah.
So I started there doing that and really just made a name for myself on campus and out there. And you know, just fast forward to getting out of college and coming back to LA, I kind of died off doing it. But around 2005, 2006, I came back out here to LA.
Yeah.
And around 2007, I dropped Presonomics.
Yeah, I remember that. Started from there. So. Yeah, I used to kind of run in the same circles with you as like the Spliff and
the Spliff, the Pit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like there was a cool little scene going on back in like 07, 08. Feel me?
Yeah.
Like, you from LA? You born in?
Born and raised
in LA. What part?
Inglewood, South Central.
Inglewood.
Yeah. So yeah. I've lived all over. So.
Yeah. What's that all about?
I mean, that's just, you know, greatest city within the city, you know? Yeah, it's probably one of the largest cities within the city, in America. But I grew up in there in the 80s, and it was, you know, it's a whole different time, man. But I lived all over through Inglewood, but I also lived on Florence and Normandy in South Central. So if cats don't know about Florence and Normandy, that's where the riots started.
Yep.
So I actually witnessed shit like that happen, you know, firsthand. You know, seeing people rolling their trucks up on my lawn and all that type of shit. You know, it's crazy. And me being a mixed, you know, race person, you know, my mom's is white, my pops is black.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, a lot of times, if people see my mom, you know, which is funny, when people see my mom, they don't think that she's like white. You know, they think, oh, she's mixed with something or da da da. Just how she carries herself. You know, she don't carry herself hood or nothing like that. It's just how she carries herself.
It's just
she
got a finger wave.
Yeah, nah, not that bad. Not that close though. Nah, I'm just messing with you. But yeah, that was a whole different experience. You know, cats don't know about that when they really was like, yeah, if you wasn't black rolling through that intersection in that area at that time, you was about
you were
to
donezo.
Get yeah, you
yeah.
might die. You know.
Are your folks together still?
Nah.
Were they together when you were a kid?
Nah.
So you were living with mom or dad?
She had remarried.
She remarried?
Yeah, word. So I had a stepfather and stuff. Word. So most of my life. My pops, I just reconnected with him 2010. I went to A3C. I had to perform, and he's from Atlanta, and he reached out,
He reached out. No shit. That's great. So you didn't know him at all as a kid?
Hell no.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it like pretty bitter about it or what?
Nah. I mean, I wasn't one of them kids, man, because I had a stepfather. So.
Yeah.
All that type of shit, you know, like me and him had our issues, but I never was missing a pops or a father.
Was she already like remarried by the time you were kind of cognizant or whatever? Like was
yeah,
that
yeah, she
that,
was
like,
already
dad?
My pops was out of my life probably. I think he said like one and a half, and she had already started messing with who had become my stepfather at like two.
Because
all his family, they know me.
Yeah. So did they end up having more? You got brothers and sisters now?
Yeah, I got a sister and like aunts and all that. So that's crazy. Yeah. That's real random, you know. That's a whole nother story. But it's dope.
Yeah.
To me, that's how I look at it. It's just dope. You know, no ill will about it. It's cool to me because you get to see where you come from.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's dope finding out that he was a musician.
No shit. What did he do?
Yeah, he used to be a keyboardist and background singer for a couple cast session singers.
I would imagine that's pretty interesting, like finding out about your actual genealogy and figuring out, like, oh, wait, music is in the blood.
Yeah, that was really bugged out to me. You know what I'm saying? Because it kind of, I ain't going to say it validates it, but you just understand where it comes from. Because in my family, nobody, you know, is on a music tip like I am.
Was it weird to see, like, did you look like him?
Yeah. A little bit. You know, I look like my mom's mostly, but like my eyes and stuff.
Yeah,
my eyes definitely.
That's a trip. How did he find you? On Facebook or something?
He reached out to my mom's on Facebook.
No shit. And it was just like coincidental of like, oh, well, he's going to be in Atlanta this fucking month or something.
Nah, he was reaching out and he got my contact from her. Yeah. And then I was like, well, I'm about to be down there anyway.
Yeah.
And he flew me out a month right before, though.
Oh, really?
So I will say that. Yeah, he flew me out like a month right before.
That's cool, man.
Like, end of August, and then I went out there beginning of October.
Yeah. So what, you just, like, met the whole family and shit on his side?
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah,
that's
was
really
real
dope.
Bugged out. You
that's
know?
Dope.
Old grannies and all type of stuff, man.
That's dope. That sounds like a cool experience.
Yeah, man. I think more people should look at it that way. I don't think you should have no ill will. It's been so long. How much of a grudge can you really hold against
anybody?
Well, and
you got to think, like, you got to put yourself in their perspective. Like, probably fucking a couple young kids, that shit happened. And it's like, you know, what was I doing when I was, like, 21 or to 25? Like, if I would have knocked somebody up, like, I would have probably been a fucking piece of shit. Feel me? But, yeah.
That's how my mom was like. She was like, man. Well, not my mom's. That's how my pops. He was like, man, you know, I was dealing coke on the side.
Yeah.
You know, he was selling coke to the other little cats in the little group and stuff. He got caught up on something and he had to bail out. But I was like, you know, it's like Eminem talking about his mama still on the record or how much he hates her or something or whatever. You like, come on, man. Like,
yeah,
dog, you can't hold a grudge forever, man.
Right. That's very big of you, man.
Yeah.
So what does stepdad do?
My step-pops, he's cool. He used to work for Capital EMI.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but on the computer side, he used to do multimedia and stuff.
No shit. That's tight. What did mom do?
And my mom's computer program used to work for Northrop.
Oh, yeah. So you got some, like, nerd genes in Unical, you, too. You got some technology genes in you.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I could do all that stuff.
Yeah. So what was it like in the 80s in Inglewood? That was because, like, its reputation precedes it. Like,
but that's what's funny. Everybody, anytime you're out of town, you say, oh, I'm from
Inglewood.
Up to no good. Yeah, but.
I mean, I'm from Alaska, and I know that
shit. Yeah, see, everybody knows that, you know, which is dope, but it's certain parts. The city is so big. It's a lot of middle-class black folks, a lot of middle-class Latinos, a nice Asian population, I want to say, or used to, you know, because Gardena has a nice-sized Asian population.
Right.
And Inglewood stretches basically from Century and Van Ness, which is close to Gardena on the border, all the way to almost Culver City.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's very big. And so you have a lot of different, you know, demographics in there, man. But where I was at, I mostly remember houses and nice shit, you know.
Yeah.
This is the 80s and the 90s before 2000s where, you know, my peoples were 25, 26 with a home, you know what I'm saying, where that was possible, where people are like, yeah, I'm going to go get me a house. I'm going to, you know, go home somewhere.
And that's like an impossibility in the city now.
Yeah, you know. So out there was a lot of middle class black folks and stuff, and so I played baseball, did all that regular stuff.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that. We're both a couple of baseball players.
Yeah, because
I remember I used to actually see you around, like, Hope and Cool Roy or Light or whatever. Like, I used to see you, I know them. We would be kind of at the same shows, and I always remember, like, you and Cool Roy, who used to go by Light back then, would always have, like, nice baseball jackets.
Yeah.
You feel me? I'd be like, oh, where'd you get that baseball jacket? That shit's
a baseball cap.
Yeah. What'd you used to play?
I used to play for Sportsmen. It was
second
baseman park. All right, and I used to play shortstop, second base.
Yeah. Pitcher. I can see you as a middle infielder. You got that build.
Right field, you know.
Yeah.
When I couldn't play no more. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, see, I'm a southpaw, so I can only play, like, first base and pitcher.
Yeah, I'm left-handed, too.
Are you? And you played shortstop as a left-hander?
Yeah, I used to. But see, I
you
do certain stuff left and right, though.
Oh, okay. So you throw with your right hand?
Yeah, I throw with my left, but I bat right-handed.
No shit. That's interesting. Yeah.
It's been a while, but yeah.
Where did you go to school at? You went in Inglewood?
Like if elementary and stuff like that, or did you get bussed off other places?
Nah, I was always off other places because I stayed in Englewood to about first grade and stuff, and then I went to Florence and Normandy. So I went to like Raymond Avenue, you know, I went to Horseman, Audubon.
Yeah.
Those were a couple infamous junior highs and stuff, middle schools. This is early 90s. So, you know, for example, when I went to Audubon at seventh grade, they were talking about undercovers and getting drugs out the school and shit. And this is like, seventh, eighth, and ninth graders, you know? Yeah. So it was bugged out. And the Horseman, it reminds you of like Lean On Me, Eastside High. Okay. Yeah, that's what it was. Because it was like
early 90s, like the crack wave had already hit.
This is right after the crack wave, but this is gang banging at an all time high.
Yeah.
Like, this is gang banging. Yeah. Like everything, Boys in the Hood, all that, you know, that's 90, Menace Society, 91, 92.
Yep.
You know, all that, that's South Central, all that, that's
And you were right in the thick of all that.
Yeah, we was right in the thick.
So was that a part of your past? Did you get involved with it or did you manage to avoid it?
Nah, that kind of, you know, affects me where today I never wanted to be a part of it because I always seen it. Like cats like Freeway Rick had a crack house at the end of my block.
You know
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I didn't know that till later. I knew that was a crack house, but we seen all that shit, you know, even though me being how I look and stuff like that in my background. So when I started going to the nicer schools and stuff, like I went to Windsor Hills and stuff like that, which is in like Baldwin Hills, or Ladera Heights, which is like upper middle class.
The Black Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And people thought I lived over there.
Yeah.
But nah, I was getting bussed all the way to the middle of South Central.
Uh-huh.
So it was crazy, you know, seeing all that stuff, that cast on and stuff. I loved a lot of that stuff, but it was still different, man. It's nothing now, never compares back then.
Yeah.
Because Cass was on one, bro. Like, you seen some shit.
Yeah, like, what kind of shit was going down?
I mean, you would daily see cats, you know, get hemmed up and shit like that. All the whole where you from, all that.
Yeah.
The RTD before it was the MTA, you know, the taking off your shoes if you had on the wrong color type of shit, you know, all that type of shit. So, you know, cats getting jacked for stuff, everything.
I mean, so were you neutral? Like, I mean, what I'm saying is, like, if somebody, like, how do you deal with that as a kid when somebody rolls up and asks where you're from?
Oh, man, hopefully you talk your way out of it or something, you know? I mean, I always didn't carry myself like that.
Yeah.
My mom's was already freaked out about that type of shit, so she wouldn't buy dumb shit, dumb stuff that it'd be like, oh, yeah, throw that on, you know?
Yeah.
All that red, yeah, that's
cool.
Oh, here,
I bought you this red flannel to stay warm
like,
this winter.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not buying you none of that. Because cats don't understand that, too. Like, I'm from the era where it was swap meets. It wasn't just Slauson swap meets. It was Slauson swap meet, Gay swap meet, Inglewood swap meet, Gardena swap. It was all type of swap meets and stuff, and that's why these people wore the clothes that they wore, because they was sold at the swap meet, because they couldn't afford shit else.
Right.
So when you see that big Dickie jacket and all that shit and the Ben Davis stuff, it's because that's what they sold in a swap meet, and that was the cheap thing, and it's worn, so they gonna buy that.
Right.
So then everybody that ends up that fits that profile ends up, everybody fits that profile having the plaid shirt and the khakis and the Cortez, because
wear.
That's the cheapest shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, or 501s and cats still want to be fresh and fly, so you'll still crease your stuff, but you fit the format of a gangbanger.
Right.
But that's by necessity, not like now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I never had to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, my parents never did shopped at them type of store. They never did that type of stuff anyway.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we're going to Macy's.
Yeah, we're going to, you know, Montgomery Ward or some shit, Woolworth or some shit.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going, I'm not buying you none of that stuff. I'm buying you all black or something.
Right, right.
So I never had to deal with it in that angle. And it was just trying to get around it, you know? They ask you where you from, be like, I don't bang, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Other cats that do, they may be on that. You know, I've got jacked before. You know, I got jacked one time for my anorak in the J's when I was like 13. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, you got to walk home shoeless.
Got surrounded. Nah, my anorak had a windbreaker.
Oh, okay,
so,
okay.
It was fucked up. It started raining afterwards, too, so that was kind of weak. But
what a day. They say it never rains in Southern California.
Murphy's Law like a motherfucker,
that day,
right?
Though. Yeah, that's funny. Damn.
But I mean, like, that probably been my worst incident.
Yeah,
I always found a way to get out of shit. You play sports and, you know, you hang around the right crowd. I didn't hang around with I knew people.
Yeah.
And we had homies like that, but I wasn't out there doing the dirt when they did the dirt.
Well, and it's interesting you say, like, you know, you try to talk yourself out of it, because, like, that comes natural probably as a rapper. You could fucking talk your way out of some shit. You got to be a smooth talker.
You got to say, so you got to think fast with your feet, you know? Like, I went to, man, trust, bro, I went to schools where it used to go down. So,
yeah.
You always had to be on your feet anyway. You get into fights, you deal with the gangbanging stuff just as much in the school
right
as out to school, you know?
Right.
Like, It's going to go down everywhere you look.
Yeah. How was school? Were you an academic kid? Did you like school?
I was good, man. Yeah. I was cool. But yeah, probably after sixth grade, I was real academic. I was magnet program.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That highly gifted shit shit. So I did all that. But probably once I got to junior high, you want to get more social.
Start slacking off a little bit?
Just like, nah.
No,
I was just one. I never did the work.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was one of those that came up on the day of the test and do the test, and I'd be like, "Cool, I get the A on the test."
Right.
And good.
So like the book stuff came easy, kind of.
Yeah, but I never did the work.
So the magnet program, is that why you're getting like bust out to Baldwin Hills and
shit?
Yeah, that's cool.
So when I did that like fourth, fifth grade, they bust me out hella far. I think I went to like Winnetka for like fourth grade.
Where's Winnetka? Is that that's like in, way up in the valley,
like Willing Hills, I want to say.
Oh wow, that's crazy.
So coming from like South Central,
damn,
which is what, like the 110.
Yeah,
just think about that.
So
or coming
what?
From the Coliseum to
in the morning, that's got to be like a 2-hour commute.
I don't think my parents went one time. I don't remember hardly anything from that year.
Wow.
I think it was maybe about 3 black kids in the whole school because it's late 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
It ain't too much going on. We were the reason why they were trying to integrate it and get it going.
Right.
You know, bring more kids out there. So
we're in high school pretty much around the same era. And so, like, I would imagine that a lot of the albums that fucking hit me probably hit you, too. Like, you know, it's the 20-year anniversary of Doggy Style, like, this week.
Yeah.
That was such a huge record for me. Like, that fucking changed my life.
See, I had young parents, too.
Yeah.
So I had my pops picking me up, you know, in the Jeep, like from Autobahn in like 91, you know what I'm saying? With the tape in playing Black Superman, Doggy Style, The Chronic. I heard The Chronic through my pops. You know, I heard most of that early stuff through my pops and my moms. You know, I heard Enter the 36 first time through that.
That's tight.
This is what's dope. Yeah, with my step pops and stuff. First song I ever heard was Mystery of Chess Boxing,
mm-hmm.
and that cassette single has Mystery of Chess Boxing and Cream, and I heard that from my pops, and my pops had it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Jay-Z, Dead Presidents, I heard that first time through my pops. He had the single.
Nice.
You name it, first time I heard that was probably through my pops.
That's tight.
Doggy Style, The Chronic, all that, they had that.
Yeah.
So they would play it when we were in the car and stuff. And
I remember hearing The Chronic for the first. Like, this is how musical memories used to work back in the day, because now it's like you hear a song and it's like, oh, where'd you hear it? And it's like, oh, I heard it on my fucking computer. But back then it was like, man, sixth grade, The Chronic came out, and I was at like a makeout party at this girl.
Yeah,
man,
right?
This girl, you know, these two fine sisters, one of them was named Cinnamon.
Yeah.
Like, how about that? I was at a girl's house named Cinnamon downstairs in the basement, and The Chronic was on, and we're in sixth grade, like, everybody's making out and shit. And so anyways, yeah, I don't know, like, it's different how music works when we were kids, you know what I'm saying? Because it's a little slower to roll, you know?
You attach it to a feeling.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like, I was talking to somebody about it where it's like, when 36 Chambers came out, like, yeah, you know, the internet was celebrating its 20-year anniversary a couple weeks ago or whatever, but it's like, it came out in, like, what, it was like September or August, but I didn't get that shit until fucking, like, Christmas or something.
And
like,
that wasn't no problem,
and it
right?
wasn't like it was old by then, you know what I mean? That was still the brand new shit, like,
yeah,
I don't
that's
know.
Real. Like, I could relate all that to stuff, you
yeah,
know?
For sure.
But, I mean, it was kind of weird, like, when we was at in junior high, I remember seventh grade, my art teacher, she had posters of CMW and MC8 up.
Really?
Yeah, we come strapped and all that. She,
wow.
She had the posters in, like, the whole thing was like posters of all type of stuff, all type of music.
Yeah.
But she had that poster up. She had an Ice-T poster up. You know, cats like that don't get a lot of respect on the side, though, too. Cats like Ice-T, like, that dude was big as hell back in the day. But, you know, like, I could relate everything to getting stuff. Like, my first record I bought with my own money was Low End Theory, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it didn't have a parental advisory on it, so I was able to buy it.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. That was
Cats
why.
Remember that.
That was why me and my best friends, we would always do like CD trading during Christmas time, because it was like, yo, you talk your parents into buying this record for me, and I'll talk my parents into buying this record for you, because they would have the parental advisory, and they'd be like, oh, it's not my fucking kid. Yeah, like, yeah, you can give it as a gift. And then we would dub all the CDs onto tape for each other. So it's like, yo, you buy me Redman, I'll buy you Craig Mack, and you dub it for me, and I'll dub it for you, feel me?
Yeah, we used to do that all the time, man. This the era, I don't know how they used to do it where you was at, but out here, they used to have a bunch of warehouses in the hood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they would have... Everybody named Mama would come by and do signings. So it used to be one right by the jungles over there on LeBrand Coliseum, LeBrand Rodeo. They used to have everybody, you name it, has did a signing there. And it used to be one in the Ladera Center.
Yeah.
That's a Chase now. It used to be a warehouse. And it used to be everybody named Mama would come there and sign. So we was exposed to a lot of it early if you was young.
Who'd you get CDs that were signed by back then?
Well, I didn't go a lot. I think I went to the Brat. That was it. I want to say that was it that I remember off the top of my head. That's but everybody
I haven't thought
that,
of
dog.
The Brat in forever, but like the Brat was cracking when she.
This is the first album, Biggie.
What was
Biggie
that song? Funk something funk. What was it?
Funkified.
Yeah, Funkified.
Yeah, that shit was dope.
That was a big record.
She had the record with Biggie, the B side. You know, but I mean, I grabbed that record. I had that, and I had Summertime. Whatever that album was, that Fresh Prince put.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was like 92. I've talked about that record. That was a big fucking song. That shit really like.
That was a good record.
That
man.
Swagged out Will Smith. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, he bit the fuck out of Rakim. Yeah. You know, that's all
Yeah.
He took his whole tone, everything on the song. But, yeah. But I mean, like, I had Low End Theory, so that's why I'm still a. The Tribe's probably my favorite group to now, because. That was just the first record I really connected with. It was able once you, because you know the difference versus your parents and stuff buying you records and you buying you stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
So, but I mean, real quick to get back to what you were talking about though, on discovering the stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff I discovered though, you had to be around, like you said, your friends. Or I was like the YMCA. A lot of time when I first heard the raunchy stuff, like Too Short and all that, that was my camp counselor and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Friends, like I remember. I used to go to a youth center after school every day. Like, it was right across the street from my school, and we would play basketball and stuff. But it was like, there was this older dude named Lamont, and he was like the star of our high school basketball team. That sounds racist coming out of my mouth. but no, I remember this dude, Lamont. I think it was, and like, he was just the fucking G at our school, like, super most popular dude. But for some reason, he fucked with me and my little friends. Like, we were like the little homies, you know what I mean? And so he was always putting us onto like the new shit. And I remember when like Crisscross dropped, like, he was probably in eighth or ninth grade, and we were in like fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And Crisscross came out, and he's like rapping. I'm like, what is that? And he's like, you haven't heard of Crisscross yet? Oh, shit, man. You behind, you know? Uh-huh. So, yeah, it was all about like having friends that were in the know.
Oh, yeah, man.
Like, also, we come from a time when MTV played music, feel me? And like The Box and shit.
The Box.
Man.
You saw a lot of stuff through TV, man. A lot of stuff you saw the video and it really connected.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. I had an older cousin. She used to tape all that stuff, like Video Soul, Rap City. Because we from the era where you had cable. Yeah. So I had to go like on my grandmother's house to watch BET or something like that. So, I mean, we used to always watch the videos, and that was a big connection to buying something.
Yeah.
You know, but... Definitely, my friends, like my camp counselor, man, he used to be a trip. He used to have like all the J's, and we had been in summer camp. I remember one time he was just breaking down Dre Day to us, like why he's dissing Easy and everybody. Yeah, he was like, this when he say this, he dissing Cube. When he say he go up there, you know, put the street knowledge and put the dome to us, tell me, talking about Cube and all, we go like, oh wow,
yeah,
oh,
that's awesome that you had someone to explain that to me, because like I didn't get it back then. Like I listened, I'm like, oh, this song is so tight,
yeah, right.
And I'm like, I didn't get it. Now I listen and I go, oh my god,
when he's like, Luke's bending over and Luke's getting stuck.
I'm like, how did I not fucking understand what they were talking about? But same with like Wu-Tang records. Like when I listen to 36 Chambers now, it all makes so much sense. But it was like a different language back then,
bruh.
The slang was so thick,
bro. I love Wu-Tang, dog. Yeah. Like Wu-Tang is forever for real, because like. When you understand what they saying.
So crazy.
Oh, you done, dog. When I first heard, real quick, before I say that story, I had a college roommate.
Yeah.
Dope dude, first dude I had Pro Tools with, all that.
Yeah.
But he was like super big Wu-Tang dude. So, you know, my freshman, these whole time I'd be in a studio where they lived at. So he would just be breaking down that shit on his off time, like, man. Just this with it. He like he had You God, he had Massacre, he had everybody shit. He would be breaking down what they saying. So now I understand when you listen back to it and what they actually saying, you like, oh fuck. They was on a whole nother level.
Yeah, yeah.
A whole nother level. If you break down you could break down Ghosts, all that stuff.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly. And when it's interesting to me, like after having done like some adult reading or whatever, and like got like having read like the autobiography of Malcolm X and like all these various texts, and like understanding a little bit more about like 5%er culture and stuff like that, and then going to listen, it's like, oh, this shit like really makes sense. You know what I mean? Like it's not a foreign language. Like,
nah,
I thought
they
when
was
I was
really
a kid,
talking
yeah,
some
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it was science,
man.
Dude. Real talk.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. I was in the Alex Haley Bruce autobiography, Michael Max, 5% stuff when I was like 13,
really?
14.
Well,
yeah.
See, I'm white.
All through rap. Yeah.
I'm white, so we didn't.
Oh, that's
that
all
wasn't
good.
A signed reading.
For, no,
nah,
it's all good. It wasn't a signed reading for us, too. But yeah,
around.
I feel.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, my pops, like I said, used to work Capital EMI, so he used to get a lot of free CDs. So I had. My homie had the purple tape.
Oh, like the actual purple tape.
Oh, yeah.
That's tight.
Yeah, I know about it. That is the illest shit ever because I remember that mystery around that tape.
Yeah.
You know, like that tape was passed around. Like I didn't get that tape up for 6 months.
By that time, it sounds all fuzzy from too many rewinds and shit.
Yeah, like, but I had the purple CD.
Oh, yeah.
It had a purple CD case and stuff, though.
Yep.
But that shit was, I mean, that and Iron Man, bro, like it was a white cat, man. He had Iron Man first. Like you remember these type of things.
I remember who left Iron Man in my car. Like
see?
Yeah, because like I got into Iron Man late for some reason. And my friend Spencer, like we were out smoking one day right after I got my fucking whip as a 16-year-old. And he left Iron Man in my car and was all beat to shit. And I must have listened to it 1,000 more times after that. So it's an amazing record.
That type of stuff had me back watching a bunch of exploitation films and stuff. When you watch it, you see where they grabbed a lot of that stuff. And then, you know, we got into the karate stuff and everything real big, you know, Last Dragon, all that.
Yeah. What other sports were you playing in high school?
Basketball. Yeah. Baseball. I didn't play baseball in high school, though. I stopped playing at 14. I wanted to play basketball. I lost interest in it.
Were you excelling in basketball? Are you pretty good or what?
I was cool.
Yeah.
I played until 10th grade, but I didn't really do nothing major.
Yeah.
I wasn't like on JV or nothing like that. I just had fun playing.
So what else was high school about then?
Well, you know, everybody want to play basketball and shit. And, you know, you want to do this. I'm going to be a big player. You know, everybody thinks that at like 8th, 9th grade.
But
my school, if cats didn't know, it was Westchester. So it was a big ass basketball power in LA. So, you know, everybody and their mama was going to be on this team.
Yeah.
You know, this is Cal State champions, all type of stuff. So it was very, very hard to get on stuff. So around 10th grade, I kind of gave up that dream.
Yeah.
And I was already just big into rap. I was big into comic books and stuff to about 12.
Oh, what comics were you reading?
Oh, all Marvel, bro.
Yeah.
X-Men.
Marvel Universe, too. I was a big X-Force. X-Force. The young cats, like the teenage
anything, X-Factor, X-Force, Wolverine. Oh, I love that, bro. Any Spider-Man, John Romita type of stuff, Todd McFarlane. I'm big on that. Image Comics.
Yeah.
I was hard on that stuff. And my walls was all that Wizard magazine cutouts and stuff.
Yeah.
Until about 12, and then it got replaced. My mom's had a source. My mom's had the source for Cypress Hill on the cover to all my weed and shit. And what was dope, when the source was actually hella dope, they had this thing about crack, right?
Uh-huh.
That's whole little special on crack. It was like 2 issues. And so it was a whole like 2-4-page spread out on how to make crack. And it was all cartoonized, you know, like drawn and stuff. Hilarious, though.
Yeah.
Like, this one, the source was dope back then, but.
Because Cypress Hill, they must have hit the cover of the source in like 92 or 91.
It's probably 93.
Really?
Yeah. It's probably Insane in the Membrane.
Okay, yeah.
That's what they were talking about. So it was around that album.
Yeah.
You know, A Temples of Boom or whatever that was. So she had that magazine, and I stole it from her. I just took it.
Yeah.
She left it in the car, and I took it, and I was reading. I was just like, man, I'm hooked. From then on, I had already started listening to the CDs, and my pops and my mom's a big music person too, so it always was instilled. So I couldn't listen to, I couldn't watch TV. I listened to the radio. I'm one of them kids that pause tape
and
listen by the radio with your headphones. I'm one of them, you know? So I got into all that heavy, bro, you know? So
I saw, we're like aging ourselves so much, but it's funny.
I
saw this video. I saw this video the other day online about like actual mixtapes, like making actual mixtapes. And it was like explaining it as if you were explaining it to like a tween or something. And it's like, back when we actually used to make mixtapes, like we might sit in front of the radio for 4 hours waiting for the song to come on just to press play, just to press record at the right time. And like, that's some real shit.
Oh,
though. Like,
man. They did. Cats don't know about the tissue paper in the tops. You know? Dub it over. Pause tapes.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's crazy. So you went to high school in Westchester. It sounds like you kind of like got to see all of L.A. through getting bust places. Feel me? Like you were like,
true that.
Yeah.
So
where do you settle on now? Like, where do you live at?
I stay in Inglewood now.
So you just went back to Inglewood after having gone all city. You decided that's the place.
Yeah, I'm back in Inglewood. My mama in Inglewood. But I moved back to Inglewood like 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the airport.
What's Westchester's like socio demographic? Like, what kind of people go to Westchester?
The beach.
Yeah.
White beach people. But the school was probably 80% black when I was there.
Right.
Probably 70 to 80% black or minority.
Yeah.
I would say. We didn't have a big Latino population. It's probably hella big Latino population, but that's probably goes for any school in L.A. now.
Having lived in L.A. for a while and knowing, like, and being, like, involved in the kind of rap culture, like, I've heard that Westchester is, like, a heavily black school, but it's all kind of, like, it's like spliff kids. It's like the kids that would go to the spliff were from Westchester, right?
Yeah, like even more so, like it always had a reputation even from when my parents went to school and stuff of being a fashion show.
Yeah.
Being where the pretty light skinned girls go and the curly hair.
That's what I've always heard. It's like the pretty light skinned girls.
Not the gangster at school.
No can, the homie. He dubbed it. It's like where the cool black nerds go. Feel me? Like it's like streetwear kids.
Yeah, where you think where the kids that live in black Beverly Hills.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's where they went.
Yeah.
They went there, Hamilton, Palisades.
Yeah, yeah.
And all these, if you know, Palisades doesn't even have no gate. You know what I'm saying? Right by the beach. You know, we were 5 minutes away from the beach, but it was dope.
Yeah.
Because when I got there, I mean, I came from Palms, which is...
I live in Culver City. I know where Palms is.
Okay, so I went to Palms Middle School. I went to hella schools. I was kind of bad. So I went to hella schools. I kicked out a couple of schools. And so when I left Palms, I went to Westchester because all my homies that I went to elementary with, they all were going there because that's how the school trajectory was going. So we got there and it's a whole different, you know, shock, bro. You get there. We used to rocking 501s and whatever you got on your tops. And as long as you had on some dope Nikes or something,
right?
You was pretty cool. You know, some Huaraches or something, man. You get there, bro, everybody's like polo down. You know, Nautica down, Eddie Bauer. You know, Tommy wasn't even around yet like that. But DKNY, you know, like Castle's in there with like $300 outfits sitting in class, you know, polo chinos with the deck shoes and the flannel tucked in, you know, like it was just a whole different vibe, you know, where you was just like, man, and all the chicks was bad. All of them were bad. So you like, man, I remember that to this day. I told my homie about that. Your first day on the quad on that yard, you get out there and you just like, man, this bugged out.
Is that where you went all 4 years for high school?
Yeah, I didn't leave after that.
Yeah,
I was cool after that.
Yeah,
because I wasn't a bad person. I just did dumb shit at times.
You got any funny stories about dumb shit that you did? The guy you kicked out of school?
Yeah, I got one.
Let's hear a good story.
All right, real quick. I got kicked out of Audubon because I was with these other two dumb cats. And the one kid, he was just one of them bad ADD type of cats, I guess. You know, one of them would probably set fire to a cat or something. You know, one of
future
them
serial killer.
Yeah, one of those, right? Yeah, yeah, he's like, man, we've been going to the mall, just stealing out the mall. Let's go ditch and go to the mall.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, let's go ditch. All right, fuck it. I ain't got that many friends at the school anyway. Yeah. So
where's Audubon at again?
King Crenshaw.
Oh, okay.
So we go to Ballin Hills Crenshaw.
Right there by Leimert Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go to Ballin Hills Crenshaw Mall. It was a Sears in there. So we go into Sears and they like, can't no kids.
Shout out to Sears.
Here.
That's where I bought my refrigerator that's currently in my house. At that particular one there on King. Crenshaw and King. I got a good deal.
See? There you go, man.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, I mean, we went in there and he was like, yeah, you crawl under the counter. Don't nobody be at the little thing. Because in department stores, they'll have these little, you know, outposts and stuff. And they were selling all Nintendo games. And this is like when, the Super Nintendo first came out. So they had like Mario Paint and Mario Whoop Whoop. And he was like, yeah, let's go over there and do that. And I'm like, all right, fuck it. And we would go to Walden Books.
Oh, yeah.
And go steal trading cards.
Yeah.
Like the comic book ones, baseball, basketball. This is when all the trading card stuff was big.
Yeah.
So MTV rap cards, all that.
Oh, yeah.
So we went in there. He showed me how to steal that. So I stole that. Then we went into the Sears, and he crawled under the shit and just started racking them. Had a backpack we threw. I had Mario Paint. We maybe took maybe about 10 games.
Donkey
and
Kong
shit.
Country and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, we had all type of shit.
Yeah.
So, get home, trying to play it, and obviously you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Because your parents are like,
where the fuck
is
that? Where'd
you get that from?
That looks expensive.
Yeah, so then the other kid gets caught up because he probably was a bitch anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
He snitches on himself and all that stuff, We go to the school. The school calls my parents and tells me what happened. They're like, yeah, long story short, we caught you on tape from like the lingerie department.
What?
The camera from all the way over there had caught y'all like going under there and stealing.
Oh, damn.
And then after that, they ain't let no kids in there until like after school let out, like 3:15.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No kids could be allowed in the mall by themselves and shit. But yeah.
Damn, you guys set a precedent.
Yeah, we did. It was dope.
You made LA safer for everyone.
Yeah, so everybody was like, man, where'd you go? Like, I was like, man, I got kicked out.
So where'd you have to go after that?
Went to Palms.
Oh, that's when you started going to Palms? When you get kicked out of a school, is there like a period where it's like, okay, man, you can't go to any other schools for like a couple weeks or something?
It depends on what you did.
Yeah, yeah.
I ain't really do nothing bad.
Yeah.
So they're just like, you gotta go to another school. Now, if you like beat up somebody too tough or you say you stab somebody, people that got caught with like knives or something like that, you got kicked out the whole district.
Oh, wow.
And that ended up on how you got a lot of people in Victorville and Palmdale and Lancaster.
Because they would have to move.
Yeah, your parents would have to move because you couldn't go nowhere into LAUSD.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Like, Inglewood has their own school district. You got some pockets like that, but you got kicked out of LAUSD, it's all bad, man.
Yeah, actually, I've heard that from people that, like, that's how a lot of, like, the gang culture ended up out in the sticks, is because families were having to relocate because they get kicked out of school or what have you, and they take the fucking gang culture with them, and then all of a sudden there's gangs and
that nice apartment complex
out in the middle of the fucking desert and shit,
repping Grape Street or something.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
But I mean, yeah, my school was cool though, man. Yeah. I went to Palms after that though, so I was in junior high, so I did all 6 in elementary, but I only did 7th, 8th, because when I got to Palms, it was already a middle school. This is before they started changing everything to middle school. So I only did 2 years. And so at Palms, I used to ditch every day and we'd be out.
Where would you guys go?
It used to be this cold-ass arcade, like, video game spot. Yeah. And they'll let you, they had a Super Nintendos and everything, like, hooked up and, like, candy and shit. And you just play your game. You pay them, like, $1 and you could play the Super Nintendo for, like, 20 minutes.
Oh, that's tight.
So we'll sit in there, had a rich homie. He was the bad nigga that he brought wire cutters, and it was like was dope about Palms, which was dope for us, probably whack for them.
Yeah.
The yard was across the street,
uh-huh.
So they had a tunnel that went under the street.
Oh, to get to the recess place.
Yeah. So they would close it and reopen it.
Yeah,
they would open it to let the people come from PE, uh-huh. Get on the other side. Then they would close it, and then like 10 minutes into lunch, they would open it back up, let people go over there.
Huh.
So. It was a couple classes over there too, and obviously PE. So if you got out of your class and you got over there on that side, uh-huh. by time, and you just ducked in the cut when it was telling everybody to go, you'd be over there by yourself. And so the homie one day, he went and just wire cutted some shit in the handball course in the cut, and we knew it was there, and everybody just made a mad dash out of class to get over there and meet up. And we go to, like,
you guys are like pulling heists to get out of class and shit.
Yeah. I was crazy. An expert, bro. I'm good. I used to jump out of windows. I've jumped out of windows, everything, dog.
I'm trying to think, like, where the fuck is the elementary school or the middle school in Palms? I live right there.
So for, like, I want to say Palms.
Like Palms.
Palms. Yeah, soft Palms.
I live right there on, like, Venice and Palms. But don't, if you guys are listening, don't come to my house, please.
Yeah. It's over like Apple and Palms that shit is over there. Yeah.
Why'd you pick Westchester over Hamilton?
Because all my homies went there. Oh, I wasn't going to Hamilton. I didn't know nobody from Palms like that. So I wouldn't try and kick it with them.
Right.
All my homies I went to elementary with went to Westchester. So I was like, let's go. Plus, it was the coolest school. Went there and it was just popping, like that school was, I learned everything from that school in college, but that school is like where it was at, where I learned to dress and where I had my infatuation with what I like to wear and how I carry myself to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like sneakers, not from like me, even me and the homie Tyler was just talking about that earlier. I'm not for no sneakerhead shit. I wouldn't consider myself that. I'm more so I had it because the dope dealer in the school and the cool niggas had the fucking coldest shoes. They had a new pair every week.
Yeah.
And you was like, nigga, I want those. And I come from the era of buying one pair a year.
Right.
For the school year, and you better not mess them up.
Yeah, better not fuck them up. Exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, it was dope, man. I got a lot of shit out of
that. Is that where you started rapping at?
Senior year. But I got a lot of music. I was just a big music head before I ever rap. I never wanted to rap.
Yeah.
I just was loving the music, so I never wanted to be the dude like, oh, I love it so much, I want to rap like these other cats that be in school acting like they was from New York and all
this.
Were
you getting to go to shows and shit?
I went to Unity.
Yeah.
Once.
Uh-huh.
I went one time to a Cypress Hill concert. That was the first concert I ever been to.
That's tight.
This white cat took me to in my class. I got to spend a night over his house, and we went.
Where was that at?
It was at the Shrine.
Oh, okay.
And it was the only thing I remember. It was a cloud of smoke. I never started smoking till college, but it was a cloud of smoke, and they were throwing like sacks into the crowd.
Yeah, I feel like they probably still do that.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah,
I've always
it's like still this ritual of like to be the person that Be Real calls on stage to hit the 6-foot bong or whatever.
All that type of stuff. I don't know if that bong was there, but it was during that era. I want to say, man, it was crazy. So, but no, I didn't get to see no shows, man. My homies got to go to a lot. Like, my homies, they got to go to a lot more stuff. My moms and my pops used to trip, so I used to be on, like, punishment for, like, 2-3 years.
Huh.
But they went to, like, Smoking Grooves, I remember, was one that I really wanted to go to, where they had seen Tribe and Cypress and Outkast and Erykah Badu and George Clinton and all this.
I remember reading about that
back then.
Right. It's so funny, like,
there was like no music scene where I was from, but I was like big into music because like how your mom had a subscription to The Source, my pops had a subscription to Rolling Stone, mm-hmm. so I was like always digging into the Rolling Stones and shit, or like the Rolling Stone magazines, yeah. and like the first thing that I started doing when I came to California, when I moved here, was like I was at shows all the fucking time, but it was I was in college, so it was like I could go to shows, you know what I mean?
When I had the opportunity, I definitely went.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So you decided to go to CSUN.
That was popping. I mean, I went to CSUN and really made a name for myself. Like at Westchester, it was cool.
Yeah,
a lot of people knew me or know me and stuff now. But it was I wasn't in the in crowd or nothing like that. I knew a lot of chicks.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
But CSUN was totally different. You know, I got there. We had just started going to parties. I want to say like 11th grade.
You're like living in the dorms 97, or what?
So. Yeah, I was in the dorms. I did all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was infamous at CSUN, man. So we, I just went in there with Dan. Intent, the homie said I could kill it, I'ma kill it.
Yeah.
So they had this thing called Lyricist Lounge. That was one main thing that they started in like that first week.
Yeah.
And so we gained a lot of clout because these other cats, like I was telling you, they was pretty big. Like they pretty much was the niggas who ran the shit rap wise on campus, you know? And so they thought they were just gonna go in there and do the little shits and you probably have some corny cats do a little right, four bars, right. jump in the cipher at the end. But everybody got to sign and go up, and you do your little raps. A couple people maybe said some poetry or some dumb shit. But
shout we out got to up poets, there. No shots fired.
Yeah, yeah, right. But we got up there, and my homie he sung.
Yeah.
So he could sing his ass off. So me and him got up there. I wrote my rap. He came up with his little hook. Yeah. He was like, well, "This is what we gonna do." So we got up there, and right before we get up there, during the break, Cass started busting on the cipher. So we rapping. And then one of the cats was rapping, one of these cats from their crew was rapping. He said something, and he motioned to my hat being to the side or something uh-huh. like that. And so I dissed the nigga when he's right. I cut him off. I didn't cut him off, but I dissed him. I rapped next, and I killed him. Mm-hmm. And it was all like, oh, yeah, like, yeah. oh, how dare he do yeah, something. Yeah. So, and then we get up there, and we do our little rap. And it's, you know, everything back then was real boastful. You know, like, right. Big Pun and stuff is how I learned to rap. Right, Black right. Thought and all that. That was the cast I was writing shit over. So uh-huh. I was all on that battle rap type of stage. So we'd saying all type of stuff. And the hook was like, can't fuck with us and shit, uh-huh. you know, or something like that. You know, I don't remember. But I was reading it off the paper, though, because, I, you know, I didn't know stuff like that yet. Right. I didn't even know how to write 16 bars. So I'm up there, did it off the paper. All the little chicks love it. All the little chicks in the front. The older chicks is on us. You know, we like right. 17, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. freshmen. So yeah. 17, 18. And so it was funny. They come up like maybe a couple people later and indirectly diss us on saying some shit about niggas rapping off the paper or something yeah, like that. Yeah, so yeah. whatever. But afterwards, I gained a lot of respect from that because they reached out to me afterward. Like I ran into a couple of the cast probably the next week
yeah.
going to into a dorm and they was like, yeah, you was dope. And then we exchanged numbers and it was like, hey, come through to this. And
yeah.
then I got into that whole, you know, boot camp they was doing, you know, yeah. and I really honed my skills, you know?
That's so interesting. It makes me wonder if like kids, these whippersnappers, no, but like, I wonder if shit like that is still going on in college. Cause like, when I first moved here, I went to Cal Poly Pomona. Like, that's where I decided to move to from Alaska for some reason. And so...
Pomona?
I was, like, living in the dorms there.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was, like, a fucking commuter school. So, like, the dorms are kind of empty there and shit. Mm-hmm. But we started this thing called Session A that I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it still goes on. And if anybody from Session A in Pomona listens, then shout outs. But I was there. It was the first year that they started that. And it was, like, me and this kid Graham and this DJ kid. I can't remember his name. Like, we just kind of started rapping in dorm rooms. And then one day we decided to, like, take it downstairs to the lobby. And, like, they set up their DJ tables and fools just started rapping.
Go.
And, like,
there you go.
People started coming and all of a sudden it was a weekly thing. And then I don't know if it still goes on, but for a while, like, it got pretty big and they've actually, like, they had paid me to come back and perform there with like Binary Star or something.
That's dope.
Before they didn't even realize that I'm like, oh yeah, I was one of the people that started this, you know?
That's
yeah. It's pretty fucking crazy. Like, continued on.
Yeah. I mean, CSUN definitely had a lot of that, mm-hmm. but CSUN definitely benefited too from a good student body at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That they really had some big hip hop heads. So we had some like a noontime concert, right?
They yeah, would do yeah. It every Who Wednesday. Would come through?
Bro, they had Raekwon come through, half of Wu-Tang, West Side Connection. This is before I got there.
Yeah.
A bunch of, like, this was known. Like, even all the cats that rapped. Yeah. You guys, the Good Life cast, all them, a lot of cats that rapped, they knew, we could go open for such and such. We go over there to see some because they have this and everybody could come. It's free right in the quad. Right. And they had them come perform. So that's when I first got my real, real taste of some concert stuff was there. Like, my first show was seeing Exhibit. And I was a huge Razzcast fan, you know, from Solo Nice, from Remain or Not, first song. Like, I've always been a big Razzcast fan. Like, I have his second album on bootleg tape because a cat came up to me like 2-3 months before, like, hey, I got it. You want to buy it? $10. I bought a $10 tape, you know. But that was the first concert I seen. It was Exhibit, Dead Prez, before they was even known, and somebody else. And my homies opened. And so that shit was crazy, just seeing the chain swing back and forth and all that. And you see the Loud street team out, everybody got on starter jackets with the Loud shit, passing out the stuff. And I did street team stuff in high school.
Who did you street team for?
For Loud, for Atlantic.
Nice.
Yeah, we used to get a bunch of, just for the free stuff. Yeah, they ship it to one cat at the school, and then he'd give it to the rest of
us. Hand out flyers, and then everybody gets a little bit of free swag.
Stickers. Yeah. That's why I was so big in the music. I used to have hella promo shit. I used to intern for Mike Nardone. We came from Beyond at LMU. KXLU back when I was 14.
That's dope.
With his Jewish cat. He put me up on when we was in high in junior high. So,
no shit.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. I've been on some underground shit for a long time.
Yeah.
But I never was rapping till I got out of high school.
Did you ever end up opening for any of the gigs at CSUN?
Yeah, I had my own. I got paid before all that shit. They paid me shit. They paid me $450 one time.
Bang. While you're in college?
Yeah, while I was in college, I did a new time. But by this time it died off. But they had Exhibit was gravy. I seen Dead Prez burn. They was like, nah, fuck schools. Fuck the teachers. This is before nobody even knew who they was, bro. Like, before that album came out. It's probably 2 years before. Because this is 98, dog.
Yeah.
And they burning dollar bills on stage. And I'm just like, dog, this is the greatest shit ever. Like,
yeah.
You know, I was turned off.
I'll tell you what. White people still flip out when that song comes on. The bigger hip hop. For some reason. Yeah. For some reason. That, man.
That beat is hypnotizing.
White people love that shit. Yeah. What were you majoring in at CSUN?
What was I major? Radio, TV, film.
Radio, TV, film? So what did you work at the radio station there?
No, I just didn't want to do no math and science.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like, yeah, that's the majors to do the least.
Yeah.
What I did most was rap, man, and party. Like, you know, I did a couple of interviews at the radio station, but our radio station was fucked. So they didn't even allow rap stuff till I was out of there, probably.
No shit.
I want to say. I was out. They were not big rap cats.
Did you end up getting your degree?
No.
What'd you do? What made you decide to stop?
Money? Just owed too much.
Yeah.
After a while, I never benefited. I always had loans.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had, like, loans you had to pay back while you in school. Right. It just got to be too much, man. So I only did 1 year in the dorms, and I moved out to another dorms, the ghetto dorms across the street.
Yeah.
We really hooded it up. I mean, we used to do a bunch of shit, man. Like, I used to have, like, I got kicked out of the dorms for throwing a party. I had, like, 100 people in the dorm room a couple times.
Yeah.
Wow. 300 people in the parking lot.
That's too funny.
Had a sideshow in my parking lot.
Really?
Hey, it was bugged out, bro. Like, and we used to all have it with like two stereo systems.
Yeah.
Had somebody bring their other big ass 6 CD stereo system. Uh-huh. We hook them both up with the wire and then play this one. And when that one ended, you just lower that one and you raise this one up with the music playing. And that's how you're doing it, you know?
Nice. What did you do when you decided, like, okay, I can't afford school no more, time to hop into the job market or what?
Nah, I was already hella big doing the rap stuff.
Doing the rap shit.
Yeah, because one of the cats I know, when I got in with these rap cats, you know what I'm saying, that was one thing. And then they kind of died off on it.
Uh-huh.
But then around my third year, I want to say around the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Me and the homie that was just hella dope to me, that we always did stuff together, he started rocking with these other cats that was at the school trying to do rap stuff now, and it was pretty weak.
Uh-huh.
But the one cat was good with doing beats,
uh-huh,
and he had a beat machine,
and
he was all about getting stuff. So he had the spot, he had the complex. It was a chick in the complex I was fucking with that kicked it over there all the time. So I ended up starting kicking over there all the time. And then he gets Pro Tools. And this is when Pro Tools, you couldn't get Pro Tools outside the studio. They barely was putting it in the studios.
Right, right.
You know, like, you really would see it in a lot of studios. So he got it for the home. He went to Guitar Center, maxed it out, got the iMac, everything that's powerful enough to have the Pro Tools. He had the inbox, I mean, the first Digi 001, and we was in there rocking.
Yeah.
It was, and it was a group from LA, these cats called Universal Kings, which is, they was crazy, man. It was some crazy hip hop 5%er cats.
Uh-huh.
But they were dope in how they would like the whole do it yourself mentality. That's where I get all that from, the whole fuck you mentality. That's, I get it all from them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they would come up, because they was messing with one of the chicks or something that was over in that area in the apartment, some Asian chick in the back. And so they would come up, and they found out he had the Pro Tools. So they'd be over there all the time, too. So long story short, it'd be like 15 people over in this house, and we all would be there all times of the day. You kicking it, smoking weed, drinking, recording, rapping. You know how it'd be. You just be there rapping, everything. So I would start going to shows with them, and that's how I went to Project Blow for first time and stuff, because they were all good in that network.
Mm.
And so they were the ones that got me on the, I done seen these niggas bum rush hella stages, UCLA Jazz Fest, like hella shit they were not supposed to be on, and they would bum rush the stage, start performing a song, and they would rock so hard
that they just let them go.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They're like, oh, we can't stop them, dog. I mean, the crowd is fucking with them. You know, they're stage diving, all type of crazy shit.
That's amazing.
So these cats would do that, and I would roll with them. I wouldn't even be rapping. I'd just be rolling with them. And I mean, I learned so much just from how they would be do-it-yourself, bro. One of them cats came up. I don't know how he came up on it. Comes up on an external CD burner.
Yeah.
So
you fell off a truck.
Yeah, you know how I go.
Yeah.
So he had this shit. This is my nigga, too. I can't remember his name right now, but this dude was bugged the fuck out, but he's my nigga. He do all type of shit. And he had it, and one cat would be there, round the clock.
Burning CDs.
And it was a 7-Eleven right next door to our apartment building. And we would go right there. We would make the music here. We'll put it onto the burner without knowing a lot of shit.
Uh-huh.
So we'll fuck up a lot. Put it on the burner, burner. Take your Sharpie, write it on there. Halftime, we didn't even have no case to give you. And we'll go stand our black ass in front of 7-Eleven and try to sell it.
That's fun.
$5, $2. So I learned all that early on, bro.
I used to always in college take computer lab jobs, because they would have external CD burners at the computer labs.
Uh-huh.
And so then I would be like, okay, I work here, and like I'd be like, yo, if you guys need me, I'll be over here in the corner by the CD burners. And I would take two computers and be burning like demo CDs on both computers at the same time until I'd have like 100 CDs that I pressed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. We used to rack CD kits and all that, the little popping things and all that. Yeah.
Jewel cases.
Yeah, we used to get all that, bro. We from the early, because I had another homie who was a bootleg dude.
Yeah.
He had bootleg CDs in 98. And this dude was buying cars. He was leasing cars off buying CDs, like on the campus and everything from selling bootlegs. So I knew where to go get them.
Right.
You know, I knew where to go to Fry's or to go to whatever. I knew where to go get the CDs for cheap and the cases and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So early on, we was like, man, fuck all this going perform at a showcase and all that. Plus, we in the valley with no car anyway.
Yeah.
We about to be out here and just move it. And so I did that for so long till I just was broke. And I was like, man, I got to go back to L.A.
Yeah.
So I moved back in with my pops. And I got out here. And it took me a second to get back on my feet. But once I got back on my feet, around 06, I got on the internet. That's where it popped off at. That's where I started reaching on the internet, finding, I was being an OK player a lot in college and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, somehow, somewhere that probably led me to other shit.
Yeah.
But then I got to West Coast Riders.
That What's was the first project you put out that you felt started to gain some traction?
Presidentomics.
What year was that? 06, 07?
07.
07?
So a lot of people that know me, they don't know. Like, they going to know when they hear this interview, but they don't know. I've been doing shit forever.
Right.
Forever. You know, I have to cast thing. I'm like 25 anyway.
Yeah.
But I've been doing this forever and I failed. You know, I went through a hell of a writer's block of 2 years, you know, where I couldn't think of shit that was dope. Cats that were hella whacking at me were telling me my shit was whack.
Right.
You know, like, what the fuck? Like, it took me a while, but it was because you had lost a love for it.
Yeah.
And so when I came back and
when did you realize you'd lost the love for it, though?
When I moved back to L.A.
That's when
I moved.
Yeah.
I was just going through a lot of stressful shit.
Yeah.
A lot of shit going on, and I just wasn't coming with nothing. Nothing made sense, and it wasn't fun no more.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Presidentomics, that was my whole big thing.
Yeah.
Couple of my homies from college, they moved back out here too, and my homie Saran, shouts to him, he knew a couple of people from CMW and shit like that, and one of his homies was fucking with Game and Spotter Loke and all that stuff, and they knew a studio way out there. So he was like, come through. And my other homie, who I kick it with a lot of the time, he was rapping. So we would go over there and try to rap again. But one of my homies out here that didn't go to college with us, that we know from high school, when I come back to L.A., I found out he got a little Pro 2 set up in his house in the J's, and he got a bunch of the homies, they all rapping and all that stuff, call themselves Cheapskates and all that stuff. Like, they was doing their own thing and stuff. So that got me back into it, because I got back over there and it was the same kind of atmosphere of the, you're just kicking it, you're living in the studio. Yeah, it felt good.
Yeah.
So after that, I jumped on it, and you know, and I got cool with them. And I started going to the studio and writing raps for the homie, where he just wanted to rap. So he paid me like $200 to write a verse for me, and I could write some gangster shit and get away with it. Yeah. So I just started doing that, and then he gradually turned into a lot of those first songs for Prezenomics.
Nice.
You know, so I started going out there, and with my other homies that they doing it, now I have other people to lean on that are doing rap too, versus before, most of my homies don't rap or had nothing to do with music. So you couldn't be like, oh, let's go to the show. Uh-huh. They wouldn't understand that. Wow, these cats do. So when I say, oh, I'm about to go do this, it's a lot easier to say, let's get out.
Uh-huh.
So when I started doing all those things, I jumped on a website, and I got led to West Coast Riders. And West Coast Riders had a big message board, them and Dub CNN. But West Coast Riders had a lot of the artists. And this cat named Styles, you know, the homie Red One that worked with TDE now, Big Wills. It was a couple cats over there that they had. They knew a lot of the artists, and a lot of artists would go to this stuff. So I met Bad Luck first time on there, Problem, Glasses, Bishop Lamont, Mike Stroh, Tajay, you know, Day One, a lot of the cats that was in that West Coast scene. Uh-huh. I met through there.
Through the message boards?
Yeah, through the message board.
That's funny. I have a very similar story. But
yeah, so that's when I first started releasing some of the first music.
Yeah.
But I met them through the message boards, and so I started going to those events. So one of my homies was part of the War Dogs, which was Bishop Lamont crew, my homie JR, and I knew this, and he had tried to do beats before, and we had did a crappy ass album like in 03 or something.
Yeah.
He put all the money up for it, but it was crap. Like, the beats was horrible, it was on a Triton, everything was Tritoned out.
Oh, yeah,
it was horrible, bro. Yeah. Like, all right, no knock on the homie, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
And my shit was horrible too. So he's rolling with them now and doing beats. So he like, come roll with me.
Yeah.
So I get to go to Can-Am and Aftermath Studios and, you know, Area 51. I get to go to all this shit and meet Bishop and be around Dre. And you go in one room and it's like every dope producer in L.A., whether gangsta to hip-hop wise.
Yeah.
You know, like Redmatic to Khalil to Focus to, you know, the most Battle Cat, so everybody's in a one room working on one beat.
Wow.
You know, type of shit. So
that's tight.
I got to see all that.
And that's and this is them. Before or after President
This is all before.
Yeah.
This is before, so I'm not really known like that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm unknown on the site.
You're like
and I'm dropping a little song here or there or something of stuff I'm working on, but it ain't really hit yet.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing hit. I'm just absorbing everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm using those connects.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get beats from them and Diverse and other cats. Like, let me get a beat.
Yeah.
You know, so that just transferred into, I'm going to just get my own beats. My homie makes beats anyway. My homie Dale Danger from the Cheapskates. So I was like, I'm going to just get some Strag beats, use these beats, and let's really start working on something.
How long did it take you to finish the record once you started it?
A couple years.
Yeah.
Just because it was on and off.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing these here. But it took that. And then they seen kind of died off. You know, like that. What I did it through West Coast Riders. I put the record out. And I hooked up with the one homie who I seen he did all Strong Arm Steady stuff. And I was a big Strong Arm Steady fan when it was first coming out.
Yeah.
So I see he did all the artwork. I ended up meeting him and paying him $300 to press up the CD and the artwork. And he knew the place to get the CDs and everything. So he just went and handled it all for me. I paid him $350 or something. $350 or $375. Came back, grabbed it all from him. Good to go. I got Prezenomics right here.
Yeah.
That's why it's in front of the forum. That's why it's like, sorry, just the basic shit.
Right.
So I was like, this is what it is. It's Inglewood. This shit is done. Right a little before then, I had met you and I, Thursday and YO and stuff, and Chris London and all of them. I met them through the homie Easy and stuff. It's kind of murky how I met all of them and everybody, but I basically started hanging out with them through a mutual friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to do a song with them. And I was at their first video, a couple of their first video shoots, Cream and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and got to meet them. And I was like, these cats is dope. I want to do a song with them. So I did this song called You Ain't Up On This. a cat. I got a lot of beats from homie Dale, a lot of beats from the homie that did a lot of shit for Planet Asia and shit. Mm-hmm. And I had a connect to Fresno through one of my friends. So he had beats, he gave me another cat. And so I had the one beat for You Ain't Up On This, I wanted you and I to rap on. So we did that, put the record together, put it all out, but it was only going to like West Coast Riders or something, so that's not really no traction. Especially to the blog stuff. And this is when the blog stuff was very, like, really, very, really about to go now. Yeah, you know? Yeah. I did a video, though. I used a director, the homie Tomas, and I cracked my car. And it got totaled, so I got paid out for it. And it's like, either get the new car.
Or pay for a video.
I pay for some videos.
That's tight. That was smart.
So that's why I always tell people, man, it's an interview, bro, where they're talking about Death Row at their height. And one of them niggas, like, they talking about fucking with Suge.
Yeah.
And Daz is like, hey, man, it's like Vegas. You know what I'm saying? Fucking with Suge is like Vegas. Everything's a gamble.
Yeah.
You know, and they was talking about something else about taking risks, though. And I'll be real. I approach that with a lot of my shit. I'll be like, fuck it. You're not going to get ahead if you don't take a risk or take a gamble.
Yeah.
So I paid him $1,300. Yeah, like $1,300 or $1,500 to shoot You Ain't Up On This.
Uh-huh.
And we shot You Ain't Up On This, and it popped off after that because You and I was already cracking.
Yeah, they were big. Yeah,
so I piggybacked off that.
Yeah.
Hit up Hip Hop DX. I left that whole West Coast Rider shit because that shit was kind of just dying out anyway. That whole New West, they started doing all this New West stuff and all this other shit. And so people got on that got on, and everybody else that didn't, yeah, that's all, folks.
Right, right.
You know, while me, I never was really a part of that anyway.
So you had to kind of make your own lane.
So I was going to make my own lane, and that's what I did.
How many projects have you put out since Presonomics?
I mean, mixtapes and everything, probably like 6.
Yeah, yeah.
Not too many.
Which brings us to right now. You just put out a new record a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Prez Sport.
Prez Sport. Because Urban Street America. It's a collab with Jansport J.
It's a collab between me and Jansport. He's a real dope producer from Covina.
Yeah.
Out here in California. And I just approached him. I knew he was having some downtime. I had some downtime.
You talk about like kind of feeling like a new life and love for hip hop once you moved back to LA and started the process for Presonomics. Like, do you feel like kind of a similar new wind of creativity working with like one producer?
I definitely wanted to work with one producer. I've always wanted to, and I never had the chance. And so I definitely wanted to do that, but that's true that a lot of it was just it had to be fun again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I put out a record last year called Leadership,
mm-hmm.
but it was in transition. And, you know, I was working part-time at the time and everything. There was a lot going on in my life, and I didn't do no videos for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't get the proper promotion. It's a dope record, but it wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do either, though. You know how it is. It's stuff that you want to do for everybody in this. Let's play this game. And let's, all right, these are records you need to make. And this is the type of stuff you need to make to get on the radio or to do this or to get here and to get that. And I got so intoxicated with getting those accolades at first, you know, because from the UNI shit to about 2011, we was popping. You know, it was real big.
Mm-hmm.
09, 2010, a lot of that. And then it just died down.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that did have to do with it. It just wasn't fun no more.
Mm-hmm.
But doing this with Jansport is hella fun. Like, this is what I wanted. This is the first true record I've wanted to make, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's truly, I listen to it. It's perfect record. I don't have no qualms about it, nothing.
That's
nothing
great. I could That's a great different. Feeling when that happens.
Yeah, it's very what I want. And it's so different. It's a big fuck you to everything that's going on because it's dirty loops. It's samples. We from L.A.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the way people are talking about it is in that vein where, you know, they're taking it way further than what we even planned, but they definitely all recognize that it's something refreshing and different and not, oh, it's a homage to the 90s or something.
Right, right,
or something like that, because that's not what it's meant to be, and you wouldn't get that from listening to it. But if you just heard, oh, it's just dirty samples, loops, and he's just rapping over some shit, ain't got hooks.
Yeah.
You know, it ain't no radio it's shit on
wrong.
There. Yeah, it's just straight up and down, and people are loving it, you know? It's I'm getting some of the best responses ever, bro.
That's dope, man. And it's like we were talking about earlier, like sometimes when you just find somebody that has a similar creative vision and make a team that maybe previously didn't exist, like we were talking about LP and Killer Mike, it's like all of a sudden it's like a new fresh breath of creativity for those dudes. It's probably similar to what you and Jansport were feeling, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I felt like a phoenix rising in a lot of ways.
That's dope, man. You know? And yeah, speaking of like the reception of it, the way that I thought to have you on the show was like, I was talking with Andrew and he's like, yo man, have you heard Prez's new record yet? And I'm like, not yet. And he's like, dude, you gotta have him on the show. It's so fucking good. So shout out to Andrew at Potholes in My Blog.
Yeah. Piles in my blog. Definitely.
Yeah, it's a good. Those guys are fucking dope. And so, anyhow, what are you going to perform today for us from Prezport?
Let's do Home Sweet Home.
We're going to do Home Sweet Home. All right, man. Well, where can the people find you online?
You could definitely find us at prayersport.com. You could grab the record. You could get it for free or support, pay your own price. We've actually been selling a ton since it came out in the week.
Prayersport.com is P-R-E-Z-P-O-R-T.
P-R-E-Z-S-P-O-R-T.
S-P-O-R-T.com. All right.
P-R-E-Z-S-P-O-R-T.com. Or you can hit me, El Prez Dela, D-E-L-A, without the soul, at Twitter and Instagram. It's all the same.
You give Jansport J's Twitter a shout out.
Yeah, Jansport J's is Jansport J, J-A-N-S-P-O-R-T-J, at Twitter and at Instagram.
Hell yeah.
So you can hit him up. He actually has a dope instrumental record dropping in January called Soul Provider.
There you go.
Very ill with Delicious Vinyl. Shouts out Delicious Vinyl. But yeah, I mean, we got some dope stuff planned, but this record is crazy, man.
Yeah, man.
It's a different feel, so.
That's good. See. It's good. It's fucking great to be excited about it. And I'm glad that rap is making you happy again, bruh.
Yeah, that's the most important thing,
and it's
right?
Good, it is good for some fools for like us that have been like out here pounding the pavement for a while. It's good to see you still active and see us still active. You feel me?
Yeah, true.
Because, you know, it's one of those things where you've always been a dude that I can see around and chop it up real easy with, so I'm glad to finally have you on the show. And, yeah, if you guys are tuned in listening, go to Prezport.com, download the tape, donate some money.
Don't
don't be a jerk. Just donate some money for it. And be sure to go to youtube.com/thatskindaneat, where we're going to see him perform. What was the name again?
Home Sweet Home.
Home Sweet Home. And, of course, my name is Intuition. You guys can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, space with two S's. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat. Facebook.com/KindaNeat, and everything wrapped up in a pretty package on KindaNeat.net. El Prez, thank you for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Likewise.
Yeah, man, it was dope. That was
looking out.
Pain-free. You're a good talker. I had a good time, man.
Oh, man. Fireside chats, man.
Bang. So, yeah, thank you guys for tuning in, and this was kind of neat.
Dope, man. That's a great interview, though.